Good afternoon. It's 1:14. You're listening to Classical Music here on West Virginia Public Broadcasting. I'm Matt Jackford, joined by a very special guest here. We have Lindsay Goodman, principal flutist with the West Virginia Symphony Orchestra and the teacher at West Virginia State University, who just today released a new album called Aterio, featuring all sorts of living composers and modern music. Lindsay, welcome to the show.
Thanks so much, Matt. It's a pleasure to be back here on West Virginia Public Radio.
Yeah, it's always great to have you on. You've been somewhat of a staple here, coming on and performing for us live and things like that.
I really love coming and playing in the studio live on air for all the listeners throughout West Virginia. I just love the Mountain State. It's a great way to connect with people.
Right, and Lindsay's here in town because she has a concert coming up with the West Virginia Symphony Orchestra, right, this weekend. So that's exciting, too. But we want to talk about this new album just released today. And why don't you give me a little bit of an overview about the album? First off, what does Aterio mean? What does that mean exactly?
Excellent question. So it's an Italian word, and Aterio means ethereal. With all of my albums, I've chosen some sort of reference from the pieces involved. And Aterio is the opening tempo mark for Peter Castine's In Memoriam, which is one of the works on the album mm-hmm. for flute and cello. And I just really love that word. The flute is often thought of as a haunting and ethereal instrument, so it seems to go well with my instrument as well.
Okay, that's awesome. Well, good explanation there. So how did you gather up this group of composers? You've got all sorts of different living composers here. What did you do to put them all together?
Well, this was a really unique project. My first two albums were all of commissioned works that were written for me. And when I released my second album about 2 years ago, my label Parma Recordings and I had a wonderful time working together. And they approached me afterwards and said, would you like to do another album? We'd love to put out a call for scores and ask composers from all over the world to submit pieces for you and your chamber groups so that we can record another compilation album, and Aterio is the result of that. So it's really interesting in that a couple of the composers on the album are people that I know well and whose works I've championed, and then there are some other cool new composers and new pieces that I never would have known if it weren't for this project. So my world has expanded thanks to this album.
Right, yeah. That's awesome to have. It's so great, you know, just having someone who's like sort of a champion of new music and bringing like giving, you know, work and reason for all these composers to have their pieces exist and, you know, put on an album, things like that. So,
absolutely. Well, I say it all the time, but Beethoven never returns my calls.
actually quoted you on Wednesday, that quote, because Larry Lowe was here. We were talking about, you know, Polina's new piece that's right. going to be with the West Virginia Symphony Orchestra, Winter Bells. And I said, he's like, well, we are going to have her doing a pre-concert talk. I was like, well, as Lindsay Goodman says, Beethoven never returns her emails. So
it's so true. And this is why I love working with living composers. If I have a question, I simply shoot them an email or a text and I get a great response. And it really feels like collaboration.
Right.
I just feel like music making should be a three-part collaboration between the composer and the performer and the audience.
Right.
And I prefer it when all three parties are alive.
Right. Yeah, for sure. Fair enough. And, you know, it's great when creating a work is, and a recording is, you know, a living, breathing thing, you know, where you're sort of molding and crafting it as you go, and you get to work with the composer who has their intentions, you know, that they want to get out. So that's
absolutely.
Really cool.
And with this project, all of these pieces were existent before. So rather than working with the composers on the composition of the piece, I was really working to create their ideal interpretation, which was a different experience for me. So some of them got to be there live in the studio when we recorded. Others I had great Skype sessions with, working through details or traded recordings back and forth. So it was a really fun experience to really try to help them achieve the perfection of what they wanted out of each and every piece.
Right, absolutely. I want to know a little bit about the recording process. When and where did you record this album?
Well, this was very special. One of the things that Parma Recordings asked of me was, they're like, would you like to come and make this album at home? And I said,
oh,
well,
really?
Yes. So as somebody who travels nearly about half of every month, it was such a wonderful idea to make an album at home in Columbus, Ohio, where I'm from.
Literally your house.
Well, no, not literally my house, but I got to sleep in my own bed every night, which was an exciting thing.
So they came to Pinkerington, Ohio?
They actually came to Columbus, and we recorded at the Ohio State University at the Department of Music, Weigel Hall. And that was a wonderful experience because I've been performing in that particular hall since I was a 14-year-old high school freshman. So it was really fun to think like, wow, I played here back in the day and here I am making an album in the same space.
Right, full
so it was
circle.
Very fun. And they brought in a wonderful producer. His name is Brad Michelle. He's a fantastic, fantastic engineer and producer to record the album. He has several Grammys to his name. And it was a dream experience working with him and also Lucas Paquette, the other technician on the job. We had a great time recording right at home in Columbus.
Right. That's really cool. So you didn't have to travel far. I know on your last albums, I think you had to travel to record those, correct?
Absolutely. I recorded my previous album in Pittsburgh and then the one before it in Indiana. Mm-hmm. So getting to stay at home worked out well for me.
That's nice. A nice and relaxing process with it. So how did you interact with these composers while recording these pieces? Did the composers come to Columbus? Did you Skype them in? How did you do that?
Absolutely. So a few composers actually came and were in the studio with us in the green room. And that's always a great experience. It's usually my favorite way to do it is with the composer on site so that we're really communicating to make sure that both of our visions are true. And so Mara Helmuth was there in studio. Jen Jolly was there in studio. It was really great to have some folks. And then the others, there's a really unique situation that my label has worked out where the composers, if they can't be there in person, will then Skype in to provide feedback. And so they're typing back and forth with one of the technicians in the booth and giving me feedback as I'm playing to make sure that we're getting the right thing. So they can hear everything live, even though they might be on a completely different time zone.
Right. Okay. Very interesting. And, you know, what sorts of feedback do you get from the composers? You know, what's an example?
Oh, all sorts of things. I think the most interesting feedback we got while recording this piece was when we were doing Peter Castine's In Memoriam, the final note is a stomp. And I had the night before tested several pairs of shoes to find the perfect stomp, and yet no stomp was sufficient. And so Peter himself had to come out in his cowboy boots and stomp in his cowboy boots on the wooden stage floor to make sure we got the right sound.
Right.
So I think that's an interesting piece of feedback. More generally, though, composers at the time of recording are interested more in big picture things, I think. So I get a lot of feedback, especially for the solo flute works on this album, about making sure that there's enough time and space and liberty to make sure that everything feels really organic. Mm-hmm. And then some composers, of course, are a little bit more picky and they want to be all about every note. Okay, so that one's shorter this breath quicker and this little passage faster. So I think it takes all kinds of composers to put together a successful project. And I frankly thrive on that because if it's always the same, then it's not interesting. It seems to me that the personality of the composer often comes out not only in the piece they write, but in the way that they tend to work with their performers too.
Yeah, absolutely. And so let's listen to a track first from the CD. I would love to just, you know, play one of these tracks before we get you playing live. And I'd like to play the piece Butterfly Within by Mara Helmuth. Can you talk about that a little bit?
Absolutely. This is one of the pieces that I knew before and one of the composers that I knew prior to this Call for Scores project. Mara teaches at the University of Cincinnati College Conservatory of Music. And a few years ago, I had been out as a guest of her department because she runs the computer music program. And when I came out to perform and work with her students, she suggested that I perform this wonderful piece of hers. Mm-hmm. It's a four-movement work for flute and electronics. There's a version both for fixed media and for live processed. And it's very fascinating. She was going through a health crisis at the time. And so some of the titles of the movement, for instance, there's one that says, I am radioactive.
Yeah, I saw that. I noticed that.
Yeah. So this is supposed to be about her health journey.
Oh, wow.
And so Butterfly Within also references that as well.
Gotcha.
And so I really enjoy the fact that the flute part is very challenging, but also very organic, and that the electronics are so interactive to really create a unique sort of sound world that I think sometimes sounds like a hospital environment, and sometimes sounds like perhaps the nervousness we have inside when something isn't quite right, and sort of everywhere in between. So I think it's amazing to have a piece that can use technology to express something so human.
Yeah, well, let's take a listen to this piece. That was a good introduction, by the way, Lindsay. That was nice. Let's listen to Butterfly Within by Mara Helmuth. And this is for solo flute and fixed media, meaning there's electronic playback behind it. And it's a four-movement work, and we have Serenity, I Am Radioactive, From Inside, and Seeing Within. And, of course, performing is Lindsay Goodman on flute.
Thank you.
Music there of Mara Helmuth, a piece called Butterfly Within for solo flute and fixed media. And we heard a four-movement work, including Serenity, I Am Radioactive, From Inside, and Seeing Within. And performing the flute was Lindsay Goodman, and this is from her new CD, Aterio. And she's here with us today to talk about this new CD, which has just been released today, and that's so exciting. Lindsay, great job on that performance there, and playing with the fixed media there. I know that's sometimes tough to coordinate. Actually, I want to talk about that a little bit. How do you sometimes coordinate the fixed playback with your flute playing?
Absolutely. So fixed media is a lot like playing with a soundtrack or playing with a recording. This style of electroacoustic music has me playing my live flute against something that's already been recorded that never changes. So unlike playing with my colleagues in the orchestra or a chamber group where we can all sort of be flexible together, there's no flexibility when you're playing against something that's already been created.
Mm-hmm.
For this piece, for Mara's work, all of the movements are at quarter note equals 60, so it's pretty easy to put on a visual-only metronome and play along. And she has done a great job in her piece of writing two lines, my line for flute, and then a line of cues, which come from the computer part, the electronics.
Mm-hmm.
And so that's also another easy way to coordinate. Different composers, though, take different tracks towards writing for fixed media. Some will provide a click track. Sometimes they'll even provide click tracks at different tempos for practicing versus performance. And then others, you just have to listen to the track over and over and over again. Fall asleep to it, wake up to it, listen to it while you run, listen to it while you clean, listen to it while you drive until you have it memorized enough to really line up to it in the heat of the moment.
Wow. Okay. So that's interesting. And, you know, because sometimes, you know, the electronic part is very ambient and it's, you know, kind of just come in wherever. Sometimes it's not like completely coordinated. And sometimes it's very coordinated down to the note. Does for that last piece, did she have, you know, every cue written out, you know, scored out on the paper and everything like that?
Most of them, yes. The first movement is the one which is most ambient and it actually has the least cues.
Oh, okay.
So on that one, I just pretty much play with the visual metronome, even in a performance. But for the other ones, a lot of the cues are spot on. And so it's just a matter of hearing, okay, this is when it gets a little bit more granulated or a little bit fuzzier, and then boom, the thing has to happen. So getting used to those sort of subtle cues from the soundtrack is also really helpful.
Nice. Okay, great. So we have, you know, this interesting, you know, electronic music with acoustic music. But what is it about electronic music that draws you in?
My name's Lindsay Goodman. I'm addicted to technology. This hour with my phone on airplane mode is giving me the hives because I can't check my phone.
Right.
I always have a laptop or a tablet or whatever else with me. Mm-hmm. And I think that's the way more and more of us are living our lives, that technology is truly integrated with everything we do all the time. And so if our technology isn't also integrated with our art making, we're not being true to who we are as 21st century humans, right?
Yeah. Wow.
The music that we make and the music that we intake and that we enjoy should reflect our lives as best as possible if it's really going to speak to us. So if we're a culture who's addicted to technology, well, then our music needs to have some tech in it as well.
Right.
And especially for me as someone who plays the flute's a beautiful instrument, but I can't do a lot just by myself. By introducing electroacoustic music, I have a world of different sound possibilities available to me. So many more different sounds and genres than I could ever play with just the flute. So it really allows me to be a more flexible and creative performer.
Right. Wow. Well said, Lindsay. I like that. And so many other genres of music use electronics in some capacity, whether it's, you know, synthesizers or things like that, or effects, things like that. So why not classical music? Why not instrumental music like
this? Oh, yes. And because most of the music we intake from popular music genres have that sort of electronic basis, I also find that electroacoustic music is a great way to communicate with people who are new to classical music, because there's going to be some sounds in electroacoustic music that's more similar to what they're hearing in their usual musical styles than, say, Beethoven.
Right, true.
So I think it's a great way to bring more people into the classical music fold through this new avenue of technology.
Great. Well said. I like that. So Lindsay, we've talked about all this electronic music and acoustic music, but now we're going to play, I'd like to, for you to play live for us, a piece for solo flute. And first, I'd like for you to play a piece by Josh Oxford called Blues. And do you want to set this up a little bit before you, head to the mic?
Oh, absolutely. So this was one of the pieces that came into the call for scores. I didn't know Josh before. I didn't know this work. And I received a recording and a copy of the score. And I start reading through the score. And I'm like, wait a second. That's straight no chaser. And so there's actual quotes from Blues in there.
Okay, okay.
And as someone who, you know, plays a prim and proper instrument, I've always wished I had the ability to play some other genres. And Josh uses a lot of extended techniques. These are alternative methods of making sound on our traditional instruments. And by using a whole variety of extended techniques, he allows me to sound like I'm plucking a banjo or maybe using a whammy pedal on a guitar so that I can sound like I'm a whole blues band. And finally, the prim and proper flute gets to join the party down in the bar with the blues guy.
Right. Yeah, okay. Gotcha. So this is a cool piece here. This is the first track off the album. Lindsay, go ahead and head on over to our performance mic in the studio. This is Blues by Josh Oxford. She's going to just play a couple notes, make sure she's warm. And this might be a good time for a quick underwriting break. Support for West Virginia Public Broadcasting is provided by Segra, providing next-generation communication solutions over an expanding fiber optics network. More information at segra.com. And by Allen & Carlin & Associates, PLLC, a West Virginia law firm representing the rights of employees and victims of injuries, online at wvjustice.com. All right, Lindsay, you look like you're all ready to go, so let's hear Blues by Josh Oxford.
Bye.
Yeah. Oh, that was so cool. That was so cool. Wow. That was a piece by Josh Oxford there called Blues. Blues with a Z and a few dots at the end too. And that was performed live in studio by Lindsay Goodman, who just released her album Materio. And of course, that's the first track from that album. Such a cool piece there. All sorts of different extended techniques. You want to talk about that a little bit? I mean, at one point you're singing and playing at the same time. It reminded me of something like Jethro Tull would do. Ian Anderson from Jethro Tull would do with the flute. So that's so cool. Talk about a little bit of the extended techniques in there.
That's absolutely correct. So there are several places in there. I always think that effect sounds like the whammy bar and the guitar. So what I'm doing there is I'm playing the flute as normal, but then I'm also singing or humming. And by doing that with enough air pressure, I can create harmonics over top of it. So it really creates this visceral sound that sounds nearly nothing like a flute. Sounds much more like the sort of blues instruments we would expect to be playing melodies like that. And it's absolutely true. Ian Anderson used that to great effect
right.
in many a Jethro Tull classic.
Right.
Another one of my favorite techniques in that piece is tongue pizzicato.
Yeah.
So I'm putting my tongue slightly outside of my lips and then forcibly retracting it back to make a popping sound.
Right.
Doesn't sound nearly as cool just on my own, but once you have a resonating chamber like the flute attached to it, you can actually hear pitches.
Right.
And so that creates a nice effect too. There's some flutter tonguing in there where you roll your tongue into the flute to create a really cool effect. And just generally, Josh went all out with the extended techniques to really create a party of a piece.
Yeah, absolutely. So cool. Different blues things, and you can hear like different quotes pop in and out there, and you sort of hear those some of the tropes that the blues use, the blues pieces uses. Great performance there from, and that's of course on the CD Aterio. And let's play one more live piece. Let's hear from your flute one more time if we can, Lindsay. And this piece is by Bruce Babcock and it's called Soliloquy. So you want to give us a little bit of background on that?
Absolutely. So Bruce is based in LA, and if you're an IMDb nerd like I am, you need to go on and Google Bruce Babcock on that database, and you'll find just dozens and dozens of film and television and commercial credits. So he's done a lot of work in the theatrical industries. So he's also a fabulous composer of classical music too, but as you can tell from the title Soliloquy, his work in the film industry has informed perhaps his classical music with a theatrical bent as well. So the interesting story about this piece is that it's actually older than I am. I generally play a lot more recent works, but I loved the story on this one. When he was a young composer, his sister met James Galway, everyone's favorite flutist to play.
The man with the golden flute.
The man with the golden flute. You got to play him on St. Patrick's Day on every classical station around the country,
yeah.
right? So his sister met James Galway, told him about her composer brother, and Galway said, oh, have him write a piece for me. Bruce wrote this piece, sent it to Galway. It was never played.
Oh, no.
Now, of course, it's his most played work, and I've fallen in love with it because who doesn't want to try to go toe-to-toe with Jimmy Galway every once in a
yeah,
while?
Yeah, right, right. That's great. Great story there. So let's listen to Soliloquy by Bruce Babcock. Lindsay's going back to her stand and her mic to get that set up and ready to rock. And again, this is the second track from the album Materio, which was just put forth by Lindsay Goodman on the Navona imprint from Parma Recordings. So let's take a listen to Soliloquy by Bruce Babcock. Thank you. All right. That was great. That was Soliloquy by Bruce Babcock, performed here live in our studios by Lindsay Goodman. That is the second track off her new album, Materio. And that's where she's performing solo flute and flute with fixed media and some other accompaniment. And she's here with us live. She just played that for us live, and she's here to talk about that new album, which is being released today. Lindsay, where can we get this album?
It's available anywhere music is sold.
Okay.
It's on Amazon as physical discs and streaming. It's on Apple Music. It's on Spotify. Yeah. There's a playlist on YouTube. It can be purchased through Naxos Direct, Archive Music, and also through Parma Recordings.
All right. So there's all sorts of ways to get it. And I for one, love having physical media. I love seeing the artwork and the you know, how it's all put together and all the program notes and things like that. So I've got my physical copy right here, which is... really exciting. I been playing in the car, you know, I've been driving to and from work. So that piece was great, Soliloquy by Bruce Babcock. One piece that I wanted to play on the air, but it's a little too long for, you know, how much time we have left, and that was Jennifer Jolly's Flight 710 to Cabo San Lucas featuring the Leviathan Trio, who has been on the show here before. But in the interest of time, I'd like to play something a little bit shorter, if that's okay with you, Lindsay. And so I'd like to play a track from this album, and this will fit well with the amount of time that we have. And this is Jason Tarrant's Marcius. Did I say that right?
Marcius.
And I named Marcius. Okay, yes, thank you for that. So do you want to give us a little background on that piece before we jump into it?
Absolutely. So this is a work for solo alto flute, which is the bigger, lower, more deep-throated and Ella Fitzgerald of the flute family.
Right.
And Marsyas is a figure from Greek mythology. So the myth is that Athena invented the Greek instrument, the aulos. It's a wind instrument with two pipes. And she was very frustrated that she couldn't play it, so she heaved it off Mount Olympus. And this poor satyr, half-man, half-goat, Marsyas, found it, mastered it, became so good at it that the gods then punished him.
Okay.
So it's a sad story, but the piece is very interesting. It's a companion piece to Edgar Varèse's Density 21.5, which
gotcha.
Is one of the landmarks of 20th century flute literature.
Mm-hmm.
So you're going to see here some rhythmic and pitch samples, as well as extended techniques that are used in that landmark piece if you're a big old flute dork like I am.
Sure. All right, well, let's take a listen to Marsyas by Jason Tarrant for solo alto flute. And we'll listen to the album version. And, of course, Lindsay Goodman is performing on flute. Thank you. That was Marsyas by Jason Tarns for solo alto flute. Gives it a little different color than the regular soprano flute. And performing there was Lindsey Goodman. And that is the third track from her new album, Aterio, subtitled New Music for Life. And Lindsey's here. We've got about 30 seconds to wrap up everything. Lindsey, you want to say anything else about this CD or anything upcoming? Any events upcoming?
Well, of course, I just want to say thanks again, Matt, for always having me in studio. It's always a pleasure being here, talking to and playing for all of the fabulous listeners in the Mountain State. And I just want to put another plug in to say that living music is alive and well in West Virginia, not only on my new album, Aterio, but here at the West Virginia Symphony. Come out and hear us this Saturday night at 7:30 at the Calais Center in Charleston. We're opening the piece with a work by a living female composer.
Yeah,
they make those.
Yeah, right.
I'm not great at her last name, so would you pronounce it for me, please?
Naza Zinskaya, something like that.
Polina Naza Zinskaya, I believe, and her piece is Winter Bells. So yeah. I'm looking forward to doing new music, not only on my own projects, but also with our beloved WVSO.
I'm looking forward to that concert, especially because I went to school with Polina. It'd be great to see her again. Lindsey Goodman, thank you so much for coming on and talking about your new album, Aterio.
Thanks for having me, Matt.
Stay tuned for 1A coming up next here on WVBB Charleston, WVBY Beckley, WVBR Bluefield, WVBW Buchanan, WVWV Huntington, WVP Martinsburg, WVKM 81, WVPM Morgantown, WVPG Parkersburg, WVDS Petersburg, WVWS Webster Springs, WVMP Wheeling.